And welcome back to the Pomp and Joe Show. Jason Mackey filling in for the guys. Austin Bechtold producing. Having a great time here halfway through on a Thursday afternoon. A beautiful Thursday afternoon in Pittsburgh. Talked a lot of football in the first 2 hours. Let's transition a little bit to the baseball team. The Pirates coming off a sweep of the Detroit Tigers. Good luck trying to figure out the Pirates. They're swept by the White Sox and they sweep the Tigers. I don't know. It's been par for the course this year. Let's go out to the fan hotline where we find fan pregame and postgame host and all-around good guy, Dan Zangrilli. What's going on, Dan? How are you?
Jason, how are you, man? I'm stunned. I'm actually floored what I just heard from Austin on the Hulk Hogan stuff. So that's that was my guy growing up.
That was my guy, too.
Jeez, this is awful.
In threes, too. We just lost Ozzy.
I know. I know, man. I know. That's the crazy. I haven't been on Twitter much today. Have had my head down working on some other projects, and then you know what Austin just said. I was like, "What?" And then I've been kind of scrolling through here and trying to figure out what's going on. And that's crazy. I mean, well, I don't know. I don't want to. We're not talking Hulk Hogan, but I've got to figure out what's going on here. What happened? Was he sick, or I didn't hear anything? So
I didn't know either. Jeez. I didn't know either. But I'm with you. That was like my childhood, my guy. You know, watching wrestling, that was the Hulkster when he was on. Wow.
I mean, how can you body slam Andre the Giant?
Right. I know.
TMZ saying on Twitter, we're told a slew of police cars and EMT were parked outside of Hogan's home, and the icon was carried on a stretcher and into an ambulance. TMZ also saying last month they broke the story that there were rumblings of Hogan on his deathbed, but were told at the time that he was just dealing with symptoms of a neck procedure that he underwent in May.
Oof.
My goodness.
More to it, it sounds like.
Yep.
More details to follow. Jeez.
Yeah, that's a stunner for sure. I did not expect to hear that one today either. But well, let's press on a little bit as best we can, Dan. It was an uplifting day at the ballpark for both of us yesterday. I'm proud of us. I'm thankful to the Pirates. Everything came together very nicely for Chuck in Uniontown. You got to have him on the pregame. He called in postgame. Just what was yesterday like for you?
Well, I mean, awesome, gratifying. I'm appreciative, Jason, of what you did. I mean, logistically, for those uninitiated, it's, you know, Chuck battles every day a pretty gnarly case of cerebral palsy. And he's wheelchair-bound, and, you know, the vision isn't what it used to be. So he has some hard time seeing. Getting him from Uniontown to Pittsburgh to a Pirate game is a logistical challenge, and to be able to do that, it takes a lot of careful planning, which you put a ton of work in and making that all happen. So hats off to you, because I'm not sure folks really, you know, appreciate, you know, in theory, oh, let's just get Chuck to a game, but that's a pretty big mountain to move, and you were able to make that happen, and I was just happy to be there and be part of him on the air. Watching him be as happy as Chuck can be, and he's an obviously very upbeat guy most often. And it really takes some poor play, which the Pirates have accomplished on a fairly consistent basis, to turn Chuck's mood sour. And there have been some nights this year, the past couple of years, where he's been upset. But overall, he's a very devout, highly optimistic guy, an inspiring guy, which you've laid out in your work and in talking to him. But I've had an opportunity to get to know him behind the scenes and have conversations with him off the air, in addition to our, you know, nightly back and forth that we have, which I cherish so much because they're so consistent, they're so insightful. He's first, not because he's necessarily grandfathered in. Sure, he does have, as we talk about the cues in the callers when they come on the air, he's first in line. It's usually legitimate. Does he skip the line every once in a while? Absolutely. And I don't think anybody minds that, which makes it so beautiful because of, you know, the show is really due in large part to him. And I think if we took a Gallup poll, we would find that the Chuck certainly indexes far more better and favorably than the radio hosts do, because people will tune in to hear him. They are inspired by him. They love his dedication, his passion, and that becomes infectious. And that was none more apparent than yesterday, getting to see others see him. Oh, is that Chuck? And the video that you put out there, Jason, I mean, you know, who's chopping onions here? To watch all the Pirate fans as he wheeled down the warning track after the play ball thing, that's, you know, you try not to get emotional about it. That's who he is. That's what he's about. That's what we're about, the city that is. And to see him, you know, get some flowers, which, let's be honest, long overdue, and I hope there's more to give, he deserved every bit of it. So thank you.
Absolutely, man. And I had some help. M&R Transit, I said it earlier, from Uniontown, was nice enough to donate a van and a driver to get Chuck there. That helped a lot. Getting him up there with you and all the care that you've shown him over the years is a gigantic part of this. I said this to you privately. I tweeted the same thing. There is no Chuck in Uniontown without hosts like yourself, you know, showing care and compassion, putting him on the air. A lot of markets,
well,
people wouldn't wouldn't do that.
I'm going to stop you short there because he was here before me. He'll be here after me. He's outlasted a lot of us. And, you know, we built the place around him in many respects. And I think he's, and I'm curious if anybody in another market wants to go ahead and submit their case, because I think we've got a pretty good one here in Pittsburgh. I think he is the best sports talk radio caller of all time. When we talk about what is greatness, greatness is being good over a consistent period of time. He is a Cal Ripken type of caller. Nobody does it better, more consistently than he does. Sure, will some people call in, rant and rave? Could they be more entertaining? I guess so, but is there anybody like him with a clockwork type of reputation for as long as he's done it? Again, eager to hear anybody else from any other market submit theirs, but I feel like I'm pretty confident going in with our guy.
Yep, I don't think we're going to hear a better case, Dan. I really don't. We're chatting with Dan Zangrilli, Pirates pregame, postgame show host here on 93.7 The Fan. You can follow Dan on Twitter or X at Dan Zangrilli. Dan, one more question about Chuck before we move into stuff about the current baseball team. Why do you think that is? Why do you think people are so inspired by him and like him so much? Because I also don't think people would gravitate towards something like that in other places. I think it's what makes our city so unique.
Well, yeah, but you've met him.
Yeah,
I think it's pretty easy to understand
his personality.
So, yeah, once you meet him, once you hear him, and the passion, and then again the consistency, there's a purity to him unlike many other people that you meet. So I think it's that, and we are a city obviously that gravitates to those kind of people, and when we see the best of our own type of people, we obviously flock to them like a moth to a light. So I don't think it's hard at all. I'm going to have to disagree with you. I think it's very easy to understand.
Oh, no, I'm not saying it's difficult.
I know, I know you're not, but you know, I guess my thing is you can answer your own question there, right? We can all answer our own question there. But it's a good question to ask, but I think we all of us, you, me, and anybody else out there, because I think others have asked the same question that you're asking, Jason, but if we really think about it and give them all, it's an easy thing because he's Chuck, right? He's the best of us.
Yep.
And again, if anybody has the opportunity to meet him, oh my gosh, it's worth the drive to Uniontown. He's out and about. His schedule is open. He goes to daily mass, is approachable, curious, and genuine. And I couldn't really get a word in edgewise with him to talk about him because he was so interested in my background, what I was doing. He was asking me so many questions, and he's so engaging to that. And because of, again, the purity, the genuine nature, one of the best people that you'll ever meet. So that's why everybody loves him.
Yep, no doubt. And let's go ask another question that is hard to answer, maybe impossible to answer. How does this team get swept by the White Sox, Dan, and then winds up sweeping the Tigers?
Yeah, like, that's a much harder
make
question.
That make sense much for me.
No, I have no clue. I think the adage of, and I was talking to somebody about this yesterday at the ballpark, you know, that adage of it's not who you play, it's when you play them in baseball, I think a lot of time will be true. I think that was true when the Pirates played the Mets in that 6-0 homestand. I think it was true for the White Sox with the Pirates maybe taking them a little bit lightly. in the first three-game series. And Chicago, I think, has gone off, and they've done some good stuff against Tampa, if I'm not mistaken. I haven't exactly followed it, but I think I saw a couple of headlines. But I actually think that they're, you know, a pretty good young team. They've made some pretty shrewd moves. They have some exciting young players. But not to say that the Pirates should not have easily won two out of three in that series. I think it was more of a timing thing, especially with the Tigers. Tigers came into Pittsburgh losing six of their last seven, so they were not exactly on a whole head of steam. They're struggling right now. I think it's 10 of their last 11 they've lost. So as wonderful as the series was, and look, you had Skeens and Keller going. That helps, number one. You combine the fact that Detroit's playing their worst baseball of the year. Secondly, all of those factors, Pirates being at home, you've got a pretty good set of circumstances working for you there to be able to complete that sweep.
Chatting with Dan Zangrilli, Pirates pregame, postgame show host here on 93.7 The Fan. Hey, Dan, Noah Hyles had something yesterday I thought was interesting. The Pirates are getting a lot of calls on O'Neill Cruz. He reported subsequently today the Yankees are one of those teams expressing interest. I think Andrew Filippone said the Phillies were a team interested in obtaining O'Neill Cruz. I know I personally am not a huge fan of trading O'Neill Cruz. I would work with him. I want to see the Pirates develop him. They need bats. That would not be a lever I would pull. Where do you stand on O'Neill Cruz? What would you do? What do you think they should do?
No, I'm inclined to keep him. I think the Pirates are really throwing a lot of floaters out there just to see what the market is, to what the activity is. And they have been in their rhetoric from the general manager on his radio shows, and I think in the manager's office. They haven't exactly tamped down and played their cards close to the vest. They have really flipped that open for business sign. They've illuminated it. They've put some spotlights on it. Does that mean that they want to actually pull the lever on all of these, or do they just want to try to gather as much engagement and activity to see what is truly out there? And the only way that you're able to get a deal done is to have as much real, meaningful activity as possible in the way of dialogue with as many people. And then you're able to start leveraging things. And then all of a sudden, the deals become sweeter. And while you probably, at the end of the day, are not going to pull said lever, whether it's on a Reynolds or whether it's on a Cruz, because an important caveat in that Hyles piece was that the Pirates are not actively shopping O'Neill Cruz. But there's no harm, obviously, in engaging in all of that activity. You can talk all day long from now until the 31st about potentially trading O'Neill Cruz. But, you know, you really have to be moved to do that. And if you are, you are. And if you are, I would think that it has to be something that absolutely takes your breath away because of, well, all of the tools, the ability that O'Neill Cruz has. And even if you, as frustrating as this year has been for him, break it all down, step away from it objectively. It's really not a bad year. When you look at the stolen bases, when you look at the ability to hit the ball out of the ballpark, when you look at the OPS, the defensive numbers have improved pretty substantially. So he's still having a pretty good year. But we just hold him, and probably deservingly so, right, to a higher standard because he has the ability to be the face of baseball. That's the ceiling. That's the limit here, is being the best player in the game. Maybe not named Ohtani. So engage all you want. See what's out there. Maybe it leads to other conversations with some other players, and you can sort of modify that, and it doesn't involve Cruz. I mean, activity is a great thing. The Pirates need to have as much of it as any team in baseball. And then the same, I think, could be said for Keller as well. Everybody thinks that he's as good as gone. I don't, for a lot of the same reasons here that you can apply to the Cruz argument.
Yep, I'm with you on Keller. I've been saying that as well. I don't think you can make yourselves a better team in 2026 by getting rid of Mitch Keller.
Again, it's the timing. You can still trade him, but it doesn't have to be on the 31st of July. It can be on the 15th of December. You know, that's a big difference, right? Because who's subtracted? What you need is, and I was talking to Austin about this yesterday, you need a bona fide for a bona fide. I'm not trading Mitch Keller unless I get a turnkey bona fide bat that can parachute into this lineup, and as soon as he arrives in PNC Park, he has the ability to go 3-for-4.
And that trade's not coming about in a week. Very likely.
I would agree. Yeah, because nobody's going to detract with offense at such a premium around the league from their whatever they've got going on. They're in contention probably due in large part to said player that the Pirates would be interested in. I'm not interested, and I'm sure there's plenty of top 100 prospects that Keller could fetch that are being blocked in another organization. Well, if somebody's being blocked in another organization, that just doesn't mean that he's as good as the guy that you actually want and probably need to get for a guy like Mitch Keller. So why would you make that trade?
Yeah, and that actually takes me perfectly to my last question, Dan. I mean, they need bats. They need a type of bat. They need a strategy to get a bat. How does that play out? How do you personally, like, what do you feel like is the most logical way of them going to obtain offensive help? It's clear what they need.
Yeah, and you can move Keller again, but you just have to get the return. You can't be onboarding the risk when you deal a guy like Keller. You can't be onboarding the risk if you deal any of your big controllable pitching options. I'm okay trading from pitching depth. They seem to have enough of it, though not as deep as I think others believe it to be. But the only way to be able to turn this offense around is through trade activity. Unfortunately, they have fallen short in development. The upper levels just don't have enough internal options to help you. They haven't been able to improve internally. Hayes, Sawinski, Davis, Horowitz is maybe starting to find it finally. But their internal guys have proven that they're not the answer more so than they are. So you've got to go to the only commodity that you have. The currency that exists in your organization is pitching. And if that's controllable pitching, you have to hold firm on what true return is. And I believe the ability to get a bona fide major league bat is not all that. I don't want to say hard to do, because you look at the Horowitz-Ortiz deal, that was a pretty steep price to pay. But you're going to obviously have to trade from your pitching depth to be able to try to help this offense.
Dan Zangrilli, thanks so much, man. Great stuff. Glad we made yesterday happen, and let's do it again next year.
Yeah, man. Again, big hat tip to you, Jason, and appreciate the time. We'll catch you soon.
All right, brother. Take care. Dan Zangrilli, pregame, postgame host here, right here on The Fan. Does an awesome job, of course. You know Dan. Follow him if you don't, at Dan Zangrilli. Really appreciate him hopping on and kicking around some stuff, Chuck and Uniontown related, and also related to the big club. There's such an important time for this team, and they have needs. There are storylines. There's stuff to debate. Should they do this? Should they do that? O'Neill Cruz is a principal part of that. We know they need to find bats. I think there's an idea of going about getting those bats. And baked into all of this, Dan and I really didn't talk about it all that much, is the future of the general manager. Should Ben Cherington be here? Me personally, I don't think he should. I think they should move on. I don't see what Ben Cherington has done to warrant remaining in place. I understand the Pirates' position of wanting to keep him here through the draft and the trade deadline, I suppose. I don't really like it, but it certainly seems like that's the reality they're telling us. So inside of that, I mean, it would be extremely surprising for them to jettison the GM a week out from the trade deadline. So what do? Do you let this guy trade pitching for hitting? I wouldn't. He's tried to trade pitching for hitting before. It hasn't happened. He's tried to make deals to improve the offense before. It hasn't happened. So why should he get to do that again? If you're going to allow him to oversee the trade deadline, it should be in a very minimal capacity. And that should not include Mitch Keller. It should not include David Bednar, Dennis Santana. And it should not include O'Neill Cruz. As Noah Hyles reported yesterday, they were getting a bunch of interest on O'Neill Cruz. And I understand that. And there's context contained within what Noah reported. They're not looking to move him. But I will say this, and I've said this from my time on the beat, the Pirates do not turn down the opportunity to have a conversation, nor should they. They should have a conversation about everybody on their roster. Somebody wants to call them up and overpay, let them. And maybe somebody does, but with Cruz, man, there's just too much potential there. There's too much of an opportunity to get burned. You need offense. And if you've got a better idea, I suppose I'd hear you out, but I haven't seen this general manager have any better ideas. So I'm not going to let him cut bait. You know, they cut bait on Joe Musgrove before Joe Musgrove found his best form. They cut bait on Clay Holmes before he found his best form. They may have cut bait on Quinn Priester too early. That certainly looks possible. I'm not cutting bait on O'Neill Cruz. That's not saying things have gone great or things are where they should be or there's not reason to be frustrated. Certainly, I get all that. There is just no way, no possible way that I would trade O'Neill Cruz. Fan Twitter is brought to you by South Hills Kia in Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. The fan text line is brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. I want to get to a couple phone calls. If you have any thoughts, please feel free to weigh in. 412-928-9370 as we're talking baseball. A couple of these are actually about Chuck and Uniontown. I'll be interested to hear what Joe and Rich have to say. I want to throw out a hypothetical, too, that I'll tease a little bit more on the other side of these calls or anything else that rolls in. But a little bit of baseball talk as we take a break from football. We'll come back to football at 1:30. Jeff Hathorn will hop on from La Trobe. But right now, let's go out to the hotline. Joe and Butler wants to talk about Chuck and Uniontown. What's up, Joe?
Well, I'll tell you what. I thought, sitting here listening, I could compose myself. But here I am breaking down again because that was the most fantastic thing you people could have done for that man. I learned several years ago after every Pirate game, I'd always hear Chuck call in. It got to the point where I started looking forward to it. And I mean, right after the game, it's like, man, I got to sit here and listen because Chuck's going to be up there and I got to hear his take. But he's a man that knows, he knows his game of baseball. And he's never negative. I mean, I don't care. The Pirates,
he's realistic. He's realistic.
They go on a 15-game losing streak. And he just sit there and be real about it, but not talk them down. He doesn't like the management, I know that. But
No, he doesn't. They haven't given him much reason to like him either. It's fair.
Oh, yeah, exactly. But I had my daughter-in-law's grandfather was very much a fan like Chuck was. He was a widower. And he was in a hurry. He always had to have cornflakes for breakfast. And he lived by himself, ran to the grocery store, and was trying to get home to get to the start of the Pirate game. He tripped and fell, hit his head on concrete, and ended up passing away. And I got to talk to him in the hospital. I was the last guy I got to say anything to him. And I got down, I whispered to him, I said, John, I'm going to make you this promise. I'll keep an eye on the Pirates for you because I know you love them. And I keep trying to fulfill that for him. But yeah. Other than that, you guys did an awesome thing there.
Well, thank you, Joe. I'm glad you appreciate it, man. Dan had a hand in it. The Pirates had a hand in it. M&R Transit and Uniontown had a hand in it. We all pitched in. It was cool to see him honored.
Thanks to everyone that made that happen.
No doubt. It was a special day.
You don't appreciate what you got in life until you're in somebody else's situation.
Yep.
And he's a dedicated fan. He's number one.
No doubt. Thanks, Joe. Appreciate the call, man. Yeah, Chuck is number one. He really is. I mean, I liked Dan Zangrilli's premise about Chuck being the best radio caller of all time, and I'm not going to disagree with it. But it's funny because it's so much more than just a radio caller. And I found that out over the past couple of weeks writing about Chuck. And I wrote the initial story about, you know, kind of the man behind the phone call, and then taking him to a game yesterday. And it's hard to put into words. And to be totally honest with you, it's hard to put into words. I can only speak from personal experience. Like, I have two kids, 6 and 11. I've talked to them about Chuck, about his views on life. I've internalized Chuck's views on life. Chuck has helped me. You know, this job isn't easy. We're all human. I'm flawed. If I'm complaining, if I'm feeling upset about something, think about how Chuck would handle it. You know, and you can also criticize. This is another thing And sorry, Rich, I'll get to you in a second. You can criticize people and do it professionally and appropriately. And that strikes a chord with me. I know sometimes the rub on me is maybe I'm not nasty enough as a columnist or a radio show host or whatever, or maybe I, you know, see both sides. That's possible. And I've been very critical of things that I disagree with the Pirates right now. And you need to be yourself. You need to be honest with people. I think you need to be fair. You need to be respectful. And Chuck does all those things. And he's a great model to people in any way. If you want to talk about reaction, post-game insights, fantastic. You want to talk about overcoming adversity, great. Chuck's there. You want to talk about being a curious mind, a compassionate person, just a good person, caring, curious, all this stuff. Chuck does all that. He's so special. Rich in Carmichael's wants to talk about Chuck. What's going on, Rich?
Are you there?
I'm here. Are you there?
I say, one quick comment, and I'm going to make a comment about Chuck, and I'm going to give you the best caller how I look at it. First of all, with nothing insured and in charge, the Pirates are capable of doing anything, and it's not the right thing. Okay, that's all I need to say about that. And I listen to you guys daily, for many years. I love you guys. I enjoy your program. I love Bob. But here's my best call. I've known Chuck for probably 30 years. He's gone to Guybel basketball games. I've seen him at the Uniontown Red Raider basketball games. And I love him dearly. But here's my call for your best caller to the fan. I don't know the guy, but I'm telling you, my vote, and I love Chuck dearly now, but I love Anthony from Oakland. He's to the point, he is very knowledgeable, and he gets my vote. But I love Chuck dearly. That's all I have to say.
All right, Rich, thanks so much, man. I appreciate the call. Appreciate the thought.
Big pop for Anthony in Oakland.
Yeah. I didn't know we were voting on best callers, but let's do it.
I did not either. The PM team did a best callers bracket during March Madness.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of good ones. I don't want to rip on Anthony in Oakland, but like Chuck is kind of, Anthony in Oakland might say that Chuck's number one.
Probably. I'm sure Anthony will call in a matter of moments probably to say so.
All right. Pomp and Joe show. On a Thursday, Jason Mackey, Austin Bechtold in for the guys, having a great time. Thanks so much for finding us today and every day. Really happy with today's show. Dan Zangrilli was fantastic. Garrett Webster earlier in the show talking about his dad, Iron Mike. An appropriate topic, really, with the Steelers about to kick off their first practice of the year. 1:55 is the exact start time, and Jeff Hathorn will join us at 1:30. To talk a little bit more Steelers later in the show. Right now we're talking Pirates though, and we're talking a little bit about the trade deadline. I put out a hypothetical, which maybe wasn't great timing. We did that in the middle of a giveaway for tickets to the Pony League World Series, which limits they are given away, correct?
They are given away, and the lines immediately lit up. People excited to go to the Pony League World Series. Hopefully they get some good crowds.
You've been there multiple times, right?
I worked it 2 years in a row, yes.
Yes. It's a
TV
good time.
Stage manager when I was in college. Very fun time.
Really cool good ballpark. Baseball, too, by the way.
Yes. Very good baseball. Good fundamental baseball for the most part. I mean, what you can expect from kids that are, what, 12, 13, 14, right in that range.
Good fundamental baseball. I played baseball at that age. I don't know if I was a good fundamental baseball player.
Well, I mean.
Also wasn't in the Pony League World
these
Series.
These players in the Pony League World Series are pretty good.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. If you get a chance to go down there, it's a lot of fun. I covered that when I was at the Washington Observer Reporter.
Really?
Obviously, they pull out all the stops, and you're covering that constantly. So, yeah, I had a year at the OR and was covering the Pony League World Series. I might have been covering Dale Lawley's team. I don't know.
A possibility.
I don't know. It was a good time, though. All right, and I threw out a hypothetical before the last break. I was curious how people felt on it. If you had three choices, got to pick one. You get a new owner, but there's no other guarantees. Choice number two, you get a revamped economic system. Comes to the Capitol floor, but there's nothing else that changes. Same owner. And option three, same owner, same economic system, but you get a baseball operations department that's every bit as good as the Guardians and the Rays. Limits, what did you pick when we were kicking this around pre-show?
So, it was a difficult decision for me, but what I ultimately decided on was a cap and a floor system and everything else remains the same. Partly because, look, you could change the owner, but there's no guarantee that whoever comes in is going to significantly change the philosophy of what is right now that relies on other things other than payroll spending. Everyone wants more payroll spending. There's no doubt about that. But I also think there are also some people that think, oh, well, if you bring in a new owner, will the team move? I don't think that is the case. Like, there are a couple of people, like, if Thomas Tall bought the Pirates, they're not going anywhere, and they're probably spending a large amount of money. But is that a realistic possibility right now?
Right. How much do you want to gamble?
Exactly. So I think a cap and a floor system would force the current owner to have to spend additional money to be able to put more resources on the field. So that is and I think it would limit the big market teams as well. Now, would it be 250? Would it be 240? A team like the Dodgers might have to shed payroll to be able to get under the salary cap. I think that is just more of a realistic option and something that I think would probably work better just because of the unknown of who would come in here to replace the owner to begin with.
Yeah, and so you make a lot of really good points, and I agree with them. Here's my thinking on that. My initial reaction was a new owner. It's easy, right? People dislike Bob Nutting. There hasn't been a lot of winning. A new owner would change all that. And I may still think that way. I'm not sure. But I have come over a little bit more to the side of limits thinking, and that a cap and a floor would be such a game changer for baseball, and it is a crapshoot. You might say, look, we want new ownership. But look over at the Penguins. Newer isn't always better. You know, there was an expectation when FSG came in here that things would be run a certain way. Well, I would venture to say they have not met expectations.
I'll say this, Jason. Look at the Cincinnati Bengals. They are considered with an ownership group that right now will not pay Trey Hendrickson. Sure, they paid Burrow and they paid Chase. They will not pay Hendrickson, and they don't want to give certain guarantees to their first-round draft pick, and they're making a big deal out of it.
I know.
But that's a cap system. It's a cap league. You can pay and keep Joe Burrow. You can pay and keep Ja'Marr Chase. And there's still a viable organization where small market Cincinnati was in the Super Bowl a couple years ago.
We're also scheming the system with a little bit here, Limits, and I like it. Because if you put a cap and a floor system in, and the floor isn't at a place that Nutting feels comfortable with, maybe you get both. You know, and if you are in a cap and a floor system, Hopefully, the parameters are set as such that, yeah, the Pirates have to spend this amount. You're going to limit the team on the top end, and it's a competitive thing.
The
revamped revenue sharing gives the Pirates enough money to satiate what Nutting is looking for in this arrangement, and everybody wins.
That is fascinating, where the owner would basically say, hey, I'm not getting enough bang for my buck with this ownership stake from a business side of it, and just ultimately decide to get out of town, you're saying.
I mean, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I'm just saying that if he was forced to spend to a floor, would he dislike that enough to say, nah, I'm going to go do something else? I don't know. I don't know the answer to the question, but it would certainly test his desire to run a team the way they are. And I do understand some of what the Pirates are doing. Obviously, I disagree with a lot of it. I don't know how you can't. And I think a little bit about the third option, too, because it does make sense for them. If you're telling me that the Pirates can get the smartest people in the room, not the people who think they're the smartest people in the room, but who are actually the smartest people in the room, you can win. The Guardians can win because they're smart. The Rays can win because they're smart. It's not going to make me go against the cap and a floor system in Major League Baseball. I mean, that's just such a game changer. And we could talk about that all day. It's so important. But I don't know about anybody. I don't feel that happening. My optimism for that sneaking through is not high. Now, the Pirates can be steadfast in having a better baseball operations department. We got into that a little bit with Dan Zangrilli about Charrington and moves he's made and maybe frustration that exists or whatever and how much you're going to be willing to tolerate, how much he's allowed to do. I don't think any of us really know. We have some signs, stuff that's out there. But I just go back into that hypothetical about a cap and a floor and the owner and what that means for one or the other. And it would scare me if they do decide to sell and then you don't know who's buying you. That being said, I think Thomas Tull is a very likely competitor. Either way, if you want to weigh in on, let me know. If you don't, we have plenty of other stuff to talk about. Trade deadline. O'Neill Cruz, the Noah Hyles report yesterday. I don't doubt that they're getting a lot of interest. If they traded O'Neill Cruz, there are so many teams out there who could believe that they're capable of fixing O'Neill Cruz, and they'd be right. They'd be right. That's the exact same reason that if I'm the Pirates, there's no way I'm letting him go. No way. And the Pirates also have to fix what they're doing offensively for 2026. This isn't a rebuild. That's why you're not seeing them make an in-season change with a general manager. And it's not right, and I don't like it, but they're viewing it as kind of a nuanced, difficult hire to make. Somebody who's not going to be allowed to rebuild, who's probably going to have to take Donnie Kelly as the manager, and they want somebody who's on board with that plan. So why then, if that's what you're doing, why does it make sense to trade Mitch Keller if you're going to orient things toward 2026? If you're going to hamstring the new GM in so many ways, at least give him that. At least give him that option. And that doesn't mean you automatically have to trade Mitch Keller. There's an argument for keeping Mitch Keller. It's their second best starter by a mile. You're going to lose Andrew Heaney. I'd like to think that we're going to see some young guys come up here. It's never a for sure thing. At minimum, though, I'm making the move in December. I'm not making the move right now. I'm not letting this general manager do anything more than is required of me. And that's Heaney. It's Kiner Falefa. It's Ferguson. Pham. Absolutely not on Reynolds. Absolutely not on Keller, Bednar, Santana. Ke'Bryan Hayes is probably a conversation. And it would be one that I'd probably be looking to end in trading Hayes. I just don't want to do anything stupid. I'm not taking back money. I'd maybe like some sort of return. And I think a lot of that's possible. I do. It's an interesting time for the Pirates, though. It really is. They are clearly sellers. There aren't a bunch of clear sellers. Maybe somebody comes along with a crazy offer. I don't know.